Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
720 WGN, a good Friday evening to everyone. 10:07 in the evening. John Hansen in until 1 o'clock. Broadcasting from the Skyline Studio here, 18 floors above Wacker and the river at 303 East Wacker. David Jennings, you mentioned the story of the global warming climate strike that the students went on. And
around the world.
And I'm all about anyone getting involved in any anything involved with our government, pro, against, whatever it may be, climate change, gun rights. I don't care. I love when people get involved in some way as long as everyone's peaceful. And for the most part, it appears this was. One of the speakers in Chicago really referenced the idea of students that were there should be excused from their absences. And this one is interesting because Chicago Public Schools ruled that any student that walked out, and we had a walkout at my high school, I forget what it was about, clearly I was paying attention, and we were given an unexcused absence, right? And I agreed with it. I think that is the fair call for a school district to make, but I find it interesting that across the country, school districts have done it in many different ways. 312-981-7200. I'd love for you to chime on in, whether you agree or disagree with what the students are marching for, although I don't know how you disagree with climate change, although I know the texters will. Feel free to offer your opinion on whether the students should have had an excused absence or an unexcused absence. Michael Heidemann, I don't know what you feel about it. If you ever participated in any walkouts in the McHenry area when you were a hippie teenager playing that guitar, strumming on out.
You know, we had a lot of when I grew up in McHenry and went to school in Woodstock, we had a very, very small town. And Marion Central was a school of about 300 people.
Total?
Total, wow. Yes. Okay. There was like 80 people in my graduating class.
I've heard of much smaller, but that's pretty small for the Chicago area.
Yeah, it's so we didn't really have anything. I went to school around 2004, and there was, besides George Bush getting in the presidency, was nothing really too
controversial. Yeah, the Iraq War, I mean, that was kind of during that.
Yeah, so I can't think of anything where we all band together and went out, because at that time that wasn't the state, that wasn't the climate that we were in. Like, it wasn't even a thought of to walk out. I heard about it like happening in the 70s and everything, but it was just not on anyone's mind at that time.
And I don't know what we walked out for. I don't even remember if I did, but I do know there was a walkout. So I went to Downers Grove South High School in the southwestern suburbs. This is going to sound crazy, but it was maybe the year before I was there. So I think I was still at O'Neill Middle School. My older brother, though, was at Downers South. And for anyone who is from the western suburbs, you'll probably remember this. That'd be like 98, 99, 97 maybe. And Downers Grove South used to put a Christmas tree on the roof of the school, like kind of on the roof of the awning on the entrance. So not like four floors up, but like a roof of the awning. And they decided one year they were not going to put up the Christmas tree because, of course, not everyone at Downers Grove South or at any public school necessarily celebrates Christmas. And I know people say this is a war on Christmas, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, at the end of the day, you shouldn't really push any one religion over another, even if 99% of the kids celebrate it, which it wasn't even 99%. It was well less than that. So anyways, they decided one December not to put it up. And if I remember correctly, there was a giant march out of the school because people were so upset that Downers Grove South was not going to have their Christmas tree. And I believe the resolution, what ended up happening is they still put it up, but they called it a holiday bush. And that apparently the kids to walk back in. I don't exactly remember the whole thing. I'm going to have to look this up. I didn't really think about it until we started talking about it. But if you grew up or you were around in the southwestern suburbs, 312-981-7200. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I just remember Downers Grove South students walking out because of a lack of a Christmas tree. And then there was a holiday bush. I don't remember how long it lasted for. But anyways, the students who walked out today, amen, proud of them. participating in civil, discussions about what's going on. I'm sure a lot of them just walked out because their friends were. I'm sure that's part of it, but who doesn't do that as adults either? But I'm pretty happy that they did it. But 312-981-7200, do you think they should get an excused absence? So Seattle, which is as progressive as it gets, actually didn't give their students excused absences for the climate strike. I thought if any city would, it would have been like Seattle or Portland or Austin or something like that. But they said, no, this is... You are exercising your right to protest, but with that right comes responsibility and taking responsibility for your action. So you get docked in an absence for that day. Like all of us, like if we just left work, you're not going to be able to just get paid for that day if you're an hourly employee or just not have to use PTO to walk out. So it's like a lesson that, they were trying to teach the kids that you have to do it. But in New York public schools, if the students walked on out, they got an excused absence. And to me, that just like defeated the whole purpose of a walkout. Like, we're trying to teach these kids a lesson on what they're doing. And yes, you have a civic responsibility to be engaged in the process. But if you leave school where you're supposed to be, I feel like you should have to take the absence. Just my opinion. It reminds me of my senior ditch day. And I did do it. I went to Great America.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom called me out. I was like, Mom, it was senior ditch day. We were supposed to leave. It was supposed to be this rowdy thing. And then she's like, oh, I called. You're sick. If anyone asks.
That was nice of her to do that.
No, it was not. I was like, I didn't do a rebellious thing in my high school. I was like, here's the thing. Senior ditch day. I'm doing. And mom's like, bring. John has a cough.
He's not ditching with the other kids. Yeah, Don't worry about that.
Yes, I'm on like a raging bull going 150 miles an hour. Let's go to the phone lines. Allison, are you calling from Downers Grove?
Or yes, nearby? I'm back in the area, yes.
Okay, do you know what I'm talking about? Does this ring a bell to you?
Yes, I do. It was in 1991.
Ooh, okay.
Because I was in eighth grade as well.
Okay, and do I have my facts right that they stopped calling it the tree or they took it down or something?
They weren't going to put one up, and then the high schoolers protested. I believe they walked from south to north. In protest, and the administration eventually gave in and put the tree back up, but I don't remember what it was called.
Okay, yeah. When I was there, if it was there, it was definitely called the Holiday Bush. And that does ring a bell that they walked all the way to Downers Grove North, which, even though it's in the same town, may sound, if you're not familiar with the area, that's kind of a hike.
That is a hike.
Yeah, exactly. Allison, did you end up going to Downers South then?
No, I went to Downers North.
Oh, Trojans, go away. Okay, have a good one, Allison. Thanks for helping clarify
you.
That.
You too.
Appreciate the phone call. 312-91-7200. Should you get an excused absence if you walk out of school? Let's go to Dee. Dee, you got some information about what's going on in California?
Absolutely. In California, our high school kids get excused absences for doing that, and they even get voter registration points when they work for the counties and register voters.
Interesting. So they get to take it. So you mean outside of school?
They can do walkouts at school. It's organized, and the police escort them.
I like the police escorting to keep the peace and making sure the kids are, well behaved. Do you think they should get an excused absence, though?
Of course, they're being escorted by the police officers.
But I guess what I'm saying is like, shouldn't they be docked?
They are missing school, but the school district doesn't get paid when too many kids walk out. That's why the police escort them back.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think about that if they don't have the attendance numbers, that it doesn't officially count maybe as a day of school that affects some
sort
of funding issues.
So they only get to protest for an hour, and then they're marched right back to school where they're supposed to be.
Get your point across, but you got 60 minutes to do it, kids, and get back to math class.
You got 60 minutes to do it, sir, then get your booty back in class.
I kind of like that they have like a controlled thing. But isn't the whole point, Dee, to kind of fight the man and to break the rules? And I feel like if it's within these parameters.
Yeah, but the cops are escorting them, so these kids love the cops.
Yeah. Yeah. Dee, thanks for chiming in. I appreciate it.
There you go. Love you guys.
Love you too. 312-981-7200. Should kids be able to walk out? I noticed Roger Badish has moseyed on over to the news desk. He's going to be preparing the news report. We'll chat with him just a little bit later on to talk about, because I know he spent some time in CPS. He was also at Downers Grove as a teacher as well for a couple years. And Roger, pretty familiar with the education system. But again, we're talking about walking out of school. Roger, I was mentioning Downers South. I don't know if you remember the walkout. It was a little bit before you were there.
Yeah, I was there in 95.
Yeah, this was the 91 one of our callers said about over the Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. But anyways, walkouts at school. Kids should be excused on excused absences. What do you think? I mean, you worked in the schools.
Yeah, we did a walkout. I didn't personally, but my graduating class did. In fact, most of the students in the school did at Evanston back in 69, protesting the war.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a good time for walkouts. Not a good time, but I mean a hotbed of activity.
Right. I don't know how the school handled it back then. I know that it kind of goes along nowadays from the 20 years that I spent teaching in about three different school districts that it's pretty much handled like you said yours was, that if you weren't there, your parent can call in for an excused absence or you bring a note back on the day you get back. How the administration handles it if they see you marching on the TV news while you're supposed to be homesick or wherever, I don't think that's a decision for the school administration to necessarily take in retaliation. Yeah. I think that it's a parent's or a guardian's responsibility to determine what that day for you is, if the parent or guardian knows that you're out.
Yeah, I guess it's fine if your parent calls in and you say, "Hey, I want my son or daughter to be able to do this, and I'm calling to give you the okay. Please excuse the absence." But for me, it's just at the end of the day. I mean, look, protesting is great, and joining causes is important, but sometimes these things come at consequences. I mean, a lot of people fought for a lot of rights and lost a lot more than an excused day at school, is all I'm saying.
Right.
And isn't that part of the civics lesson?
Yes.
Is the idea that, hey, yeah, walk out of school. The climate situation is perilous, and kids need to be on the front lines of this thing to help us fix it. And amen to that. But you weren't, your butt wasn't in class.
But
you don't get an excuse.
But I think I think our country was formed. Our democracy was formed by people ditching.
Yes, yes.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
they didn't call it that back then, but seriously.
But it wasn't consequence-free, Roger, and that's the thing.
Well, but it's never been consequence-free.
Exactly.
Fighting for something you believe in is not consequence-free.
Exactly.
And
so you
have to be prepared to pay the price.
Amen. So you should have to, if you get an unexcused absence and you're going to get a detention for that, that's part of it.
Well, and that's fine.
Okay.
Then you're paying the price for what you believe in.
Yeah.
You know, I can believe in something stupid like I need candy all day long.
That does not surprise me. That is one of Roger's beliefs.
Yes.
I know that, to be true.
But I would say that, you know, if I believe in that and I have, you know, a dollar in my pocket, I'll go buy candy. I'm not going to march down the street, ditch school for a day saying we need more candy in this world.
It's for an important cause.
Right. For something that affects many. That can be life-affirming, life-changing, and can be for the better.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We may not have time for Finish the Highlines. We may have to do it after the next news. But if you want to win a Lou Malnati's pizza, get on the phone line, and we'll see if we can play a little Finish the Headlines. 312-981-7200. Roger and I yelling at each other when we agree with each other. I love that, Roger.
Well,
how you doing, buddy?
It's passion.
We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll say hi to Roger. I want to talk to Roger about another thing that he posted that really tugged at my heartstrings, Roger. We'll do that after this on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. John Hansen here until 1 in the morning. Joined by Roger Badish in the newsroom, Michael Heidemann across the glass in the producer's booth. Roger, we don't have time to get into it right now. I want to do it after the news, but we're going to be talking about a Facebook post you had the other day. Thought maybe we could tee it up just a little bit. I can't quite find it, but I know you have a little bit of it. Maybe we could start start talking about it because, you know, Roger, I'd consider you a close friend. I hope you feel the same way.
Yes, I do. Definitely.
And I remember vividly when you were diagnosed with cancer. and went through that battle a couple years ago, and I think everyone here at the station, and many of our listeners, as I know, were supporting you the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
And you've gotten through it, and you're doing great.
Yep.
And I don't know medically what they call it. I know you're a survivor, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And you've went through remission and completely cancer-free, correct?
Every time I go in, they say, you are. We see no signs of it.
Right.
I lost a few body parts, but, you know, I feel a little lighter.
Right.
But, yeah, it was something totally unexpected. And I've tried to put it in perspective all these years. I've carried on in life. I've not let it stop me from living. But I still have issues.
Mm-hmm.
And something came up on, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, probably Monday, when I made a doctor's appointment to see my oncologist. I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I was in my oncologist was about 8 months ago or so. And they did all the blood tests that I normally get done and said, you're fine. You've been without cancer all these years, been about 5 years, be 5 years in October, and you're fine. If we were going to see something, we'd seen it by now.
Right.
But I had this thing in my head, and I don't know why. I think probably from talking to other cancer survivors, I have a lot of classmates from Evanston High School who are cancer survivors, and they all talked about this 5-year checkup. For some reason, this 5-year checkup stuck in my head, and I just had to do it. And so I told my oncologist about 8 months ago, I says, I need to see you in the 5-year anniversary. He said, fine, if you want to, fine. So I made the appointment, and I called Monday, and it's for the end of October. It's actually 7 days after my anniversary date, my 5-year anniversary date of my surgery. And so what I wrote about was I needed to find out when that date actually was, the number day. Because I knew it was the end of October, but I couldn't remember the exact day, the number day.
And that was important to you?
It was, because I wanted to post about it. Because you know me, my life is pretty much an open book.
Yeah, I had to scroll down about 40 Facebook posts.
Yeah,
to find
there's a lot that I could probably not put in, but that's me.
Yeah.
And so I found it because I asked Bridget, my wife, when was it? And she told me when she thought it was. And I finally went through Facebook. You can go through the different years.
And find stuff.
Kind of hard to find the way to do it, but you can do it. And so I found it. And so so if I can read a little bit of it.
Yeah. Well, actually, Roger, we're going to
wait till after the news?
Yeah, we got to do a quick break in the news.
Right.
But you had some really interesting, sad, but I don't want to say sad.
No, they weren't really sad. It was very uplifting.
Yeah.
The responses.
The responses were great.
Yes.
But then the realizations of who made some of those comments, it really got to me. Anyways,
yeah.
We're going to talk with Roger a little bit after he has to do the news. So we made him tee him up like that. Then he's going to have to do his job, and then we're going to have to bring him back again. We'll do that after the news. But first, a quick commercial break here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. John Hansen until 1 o'clock in the morning, 10:37 on this Friday evening. Hope your weekend is getting off to a great start. 312-981-7200. Love to join the conversation here, and including on this personal story that Roger and I are going to chat about. But I imagine, Roger, there's a lot of people out there that are feeling or have gone through similar things. It's something that I don't understand, and what we're going to be kind of talking about is, quote-unquote, survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Roger, you made a post earlier this week. It was, you're coming up on 5 years from your surgery,
mm-hmm.
The deal with cancer. You know, you're weighing that, whether to do a doctor's appointment, what you're going to do,
mm-hmm.
Just recapping what we talked about before
sure.
the news. And you found the original Facebook post that your sister-in-law had made, right?
Yeah, I was in surgery for 10 hours, and so my sister-in-law, who's on Facebook, not as much as me, but she did it because Bridget, my wife, is not on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wanted to keep everybody up to date what's going on. We knew the surgery was going to take long. We didn't know it would take 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So she posted that, you know, he's out of surgery. This is the post I was looking for to find the exact date of my surgery.
You weren't trying to dig around and see what everyone was saying about you, but then you found the post.
I found the post, and so here's what I wrote earlier this week. I started to reread the comments made on that post, and my survivors, I called it remorse, hit me like a sledgehammer. Three people who had posted comments are no longer with us, two of them because of cancer. I know I should celebrate my survival, but I can't because too many people I know, some in real life, aren't able to celebrate their survivor. And a lot of people commented.
Yeah.
And I really wasn't, I don't know what I was expecting, but I didn't expect the comments. I was emotionally writing something, and I really didn't expect anyone to respond, at least not like they did. And there were a ton of comments, and they were all the same. A lot of people who have gone through serious illnesses, including cancer, wrote that they have felt the same thing, and that they told me it was all right, and that for various comments from them basically saying, those who are not here would rejoice that you are living.
Mm.
It
must hit you like a ton of bricks.
It hits me now. I can't. This has happened since the cancer. I've become extremely emotional at these moments.
Mm-hmm.
So if I pause for a second, I'm just trying to catch my wits. If I may read one of them.
Yeah, feel free.
And this is from people I don't know, I've never met. They follow me on Facebook.
Because they listen to you here.
They listen to me here, or they are friends with people who I know, or relatives, or friends of people who listen to me here. Even relatives of my own.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from a wide range of people, and I know that a ton of our listeners know someone who feels this way, or they themselves feel this way. One response. Mortality is with you, cancer or no cancer. I had a traumatic brain injury in 2011, complete with brain surgery, and had about a 40% survival rate. I'm still here. Don't know why, but I am. You are too. One day at a time, we never know what will come. Then another one. Roger, I only know you on the radio and from your Facebook post, but I feel compelled to simply say it's okay. Those who have passed would not want you to not live your life to the fullest, if not for you and your family, but for them as well. You take this gift of time and make every day count for yourself, your family, friends, and society. Don't forget what your story means to the individual just starting down their path like you did 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you gather your thoughts, Roger, I appreciate you sharing. You know, I know this is a tough subject, and we talked off air. Obviously, I didn't just throw this at you, listener out there. I'm not just throwing Roger under the bus. Hey, open up your heart to us, Roger. Here, I got some time to fill.
I wouldn't have written it if I didn't want to come to grips with it.
Yeah. You know, the post moved me, Roger, because I know you personally. We see each other almost every single week, at least once a weekend, every other weekend. And we've known each other for a number of years. Yeah, many years. And it's the thing about survivor's guilt or survivor's remorse, whatever you call it, I think it's something you can only understand if you are a survivor, whether it's cancer, whether it's a traumatic brain injury, whether you survived. I mean, there's people out there that are the sole survivors of plane crashes that go through this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Many Holocaust survivors were affected by this their entire lives.
Yeah.
And for me, I think, well, you made it through. Like, well, I mean, who cares? But like, to me, and it's because I'm not there. Like, I'm not doubting your feelings. I know, of course. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine having gone through it. But I imagine it's just this, and I guess you could elaborate, but it's kind of like a weight on your shoulders. You carry the weight of those that aren't as fortunate or weren't as lucky as you, and you feel that burden. I don't want to say you feel that burden, but every now and then that burden rears its head.
Yeah, it does. A burden, yes. Insecurities, yes. denial sometimes. You mentioned Holocaust survivors. I knew through my dad, a veteran World War II and Korean War, a number of service people who refuse to even think about what they went through.
No, my grandfather
let alone
would never,
talk about
yeah,
it.
Never.
Exactly.
Paratrooper in the Pacific would never talk about it.
They just could not relive what they went through, which apparently is kind of like post-traumatic. Well, post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yeah, there's probably different forms of it, of course. And right. I think one of them is the idea of I can't bring myself to do this because of the outpouring of emotions. Mm-hmm. And who's to say what's healthier or not? I imagine most psychologists would say, and therapists would say, the more you talk about it, the better it is. But, you know, to each person, their own thing.
Exactly.
So what I wanted to ask you, Roger, mm-hmm. you know, because you made this post, is this something you feel very often, or is it when you kind of sit down, reflect, or when you're reminded? So you were reading those comments, mm-hmm. and a lot of them to your sister-in-law's post 5 years ago were positive. Hang in there, I'm sure.
Oh,
we love
totally,
you, Roger, and that's got to make you feel good. All these great friends of yours that were mm-hmm. with you then are with you now, will be with you forever. But then it's those posts, and you mentioned those two cancer patients who did not make it.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be – is that when it hits you, or does it hit you more often in little things in life?
It hits me sometimes in little things in life, sometimes heavy, sometimes in passing. But when I saw those two comments mm-hmm. from 5 years ago – Bridget was sitting next to me at the time when I was, because she had come in to tell me what she thought the date was, and mm-hmm. so I was looking on the on Facebook, and so she was sitting next to me, and I stopped, and
it must have been something.
I looked at her, and. And I read the two comments, and I told her that there were at least three people I knew. One, who I knew in real life, who actually, whose spouse also passed away from cancer
mm-hmm.
At a later time. Another I knew had passed from cancer, and the other one I didn't know was a Facebook friend and listener who had passed from cancer. So, it hit me like a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
You know, and like you say, it's different for everyone. It's not that I haven't come to grips with it. I am still deeply emotionally connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's survivor's guilt. I feel remorse at those times. Not just sadness that they're not with us, but a questioning my existence when they don't have the chance to question their continued existence, if that made any sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And I mean, everything that all these people wrote this time around, and there were quite a number.
I saw one saying... you know, that people that are going through or about to start the journey that you went through and, mm-hmm. and have a diagnosis that scares them and that they can look to you as someone who made it. It can be a beacon for people. I'm sure there's hundreds of listeners, if not thousands, right now, 312-981-7200. If you want to join the conversation, please do, who are just starting a journey or know a friend or a loved one that is.
Exactly.
And... that guilt or that remorse may never go away, but that power that you have, Roger, to be here talking after such a dire diagnosis in many ways is can be inspirational. And I know you had a couple comments that were similar to that, too, on that post.
Exactly. Exactly. One from a former educator, college, mm-hmm. Who I got to know, actually, connections to my alma mater, Southern Illinois University.
Mm-hmm.
And he's older gentleman. Live for today, pray for another tomorrow. Don't dwell on something over which you have no control. Easier said than done necessarily.
Yes.
But again, I went back to that earlier in the week mm-hmm. when I read it, and I go, yes, this it's something that I you need to grab onto that thought, but still not pull yourself completely away from these feelings of survivor's guilt, because that should motivate you to push forward.
Right. If you wallow forever in exactly. it, it's bad news.
Then it's exactly.
But it's okay to experience that.
Right, right.
All right, Roger, thanks for sharing.
Sure.
I appreciate it. 312-981-7200 if you've gone through something similar or know someone that is. And then we're going to turn things around a little bit. We're going to have some fun on this show, Roger. You know we like to have some fun, too.
You know, when I see John Hansen's name, I say it's fun time.
Yes, yeah, except for when I'm like, hey, Roger, let's talk about this cancer post you had. You're like, oh.
But it's very meaningful. We can have meaningful, serious yeah. discussions and meaningful fun.
And we have some incredible listeners, Roger, and they always are calling and texting in. And so I just know that for those of them that don't follow you on Facebook, I wanted them to hear that message.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Quick commercial break, then more on 720 WGN. Hey, Friday night. John is in. Till 1 a.m., it's 10:52 on this Friday night. 18 floors in the air. But a new good beat, Michael. What is this? General funk beat? Standard fly jam funk beat?
Yeah, it's actually Corey Wong, and it's the hype song.
Oh, well, I am hyped up now.
Yes.
Hey, Roger, I know you're working yes. on your... I know you're actually finishing the real headlines that we got coming up at 11 o'clock. Yeah. I've been promising this for a while. I want to give away some pizza. I want to have some fun.
Can I have some pizza, please?
No, you cannot. You will have some later Darn. With Bubala. We know okay. you're going to order it. Michael Heidemann, you ready to play? Let's finish the headline here, folks. Oh, it always has this little intro that is so strange, and here we go. Okay, so 312-981-7200, if you can finish the headline, you're going to get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. A Canadian man, 37 years old, pleaded guilty to mischief this on Thursday. He says he likes spontaneous and exotic stuff. He stripped naked where? Michael Heidemann, where'd he go?
Hey. Let me see here.
Let me think about those times that you strip naked. Where do you normally run about?
It's usually in my apartment.
Okay. With the curtains closed.
Well, you're not, or that, open. That's not very mischievous. That's not spontaneous or exotic stuff, Michael.
Okay, so we're looking for a location.
Yeah, where did he go?
Tijuana, Mexico.
No, I don't think so.
Sorry,
let me just double check. No, not Tijuana, Darn Mexico. It. Roger Badish, think he more likes... general locations. I don't want to play around the globe here.
Yeah, grocery store.
No, that would be a little exotic and spontaneous.
I've heard stories where people have done that, so that's why I picked grocery store.
Just don't touch their melons.
Bazinga.
Hello.
Go ahead, Roger. You got a second guess?
Dairy Queen?
No, that's very specific, though. Hope for not a blizzard. 312-981-7200. Where did this man
Frosty
strip
malt.
Naked? I'll try and give you a hint. So this didn't happen in Chicago. If it happened in Chicago, one could say he shed his clothes.
One could.
Oh.
One could say he shed his clothes.
Oh,
okay.
Shed his clothes. Oh.
I got this one.
Go ahead, Michael.
Do the ring in? Heidemann.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Heidemann.
I'm going aquarium.
Aquarium, yes, he sure did. A British Columbia man who jumped into a shark tank at an aquarium and swam naked with live sharks pled guilty to mischief. He's 37. He appeared in a Toronto courthouse on Thursday, skinny dipping in the shark tank. He told them he likes doing spontaneous and exotic stuff.
Did he sing the Baby Shark song?
Yeah,
well, I'm just wondering.
No, everyone else did that was watching, though.
Okay.
312-981-7200. I know you got another caller on the line that was there for Aquarium, but we're going to play another round of Finish the Headline, and we want your callers on in. All right, Roger, you want to go to Nebraska, or do you want to go to... Oh, boy, I don't even know where this one comes out of. The federal government.
Oh, we'll go to Nebraska because Bubala's eldest is going to college there.
Oh, all
so,
right.
So, yeah.
And it's out of Lincoln, so there you
Ooh,
go.
Boom, right there.
It's okay. This comes out of Lincoln, Nebraska. An apartment fire started by a woman. What was she doing that started the fire, Mr. Roger Badish? What was she doing?
Laser beams out of her eyes at her ex-boyfriend.
Oh,
out the window and caught the curtains on fire?
No.
But
darn, you're not that far
off. Oh, my gosh.
Woman in Lincoln, Nebraska started a fire. How did she start it, Michael Heidemann?
I was going to say rubbing her twigs together.
Nope, that's what the last guy did for his exotic behavior.
Hello.
Let's go to Jim. Jim, you're on 720. You ready to finish the headline?
Yeah.
All right. How did this woman start her fire? And Roger was close on his guess. I don't know if you heard it.
Excuse me.
You got it, Jim?
Yeah, go ahead and say it again, man. I didn't get it.
All right. We'll go slow here. It was a woman started an apartment, and it involved something with her ex-boyfriend. What did she do? How'd she start it?
With his hair.
Oh, setting his hair on fire. That's a good guess. That is not the answer. Thank you, Jim, for playing. Not his hair. Roger, you got another guess here for us?
I like the laser beams. Whether it's right or not, I don't care.
No, I mean, we got to think a little bit. She used it involves a butane torch, and she was torching something, and that something lit the apartment on fire. Don't guess yet, Roger. We've got another caller calling in for this Lumonati's pizza. Susan, you're on WGN. How you doing, Susan?
I think she was burning love letters.
Yes, that is correct. She was burning love letters for her ex, and the entire apartment started on fire. She was charged with something. It cost $4,000 in damage. No one was injured, but she was cited for negligent burning. Susan, you ever had a bad breakup?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You didn't burn any letters, though, did you?
No.
What's the worst thing you ever did? Did you, like, put, like, pencil marks through an old picture, throw away the pictures? Anything dramatic when you think back to high school days?
No, I can't think of something I did, but my sister did something bad.
Ooh, tell us, Susan.
She ripped up her ex's photo and threw it in the toilet.
Oh, that's a good place to put it. That works for me. That's not so bad. I think that's healthy, Susan. Well, tell you what. You're going to win a Lumonati's gift certificate for getting the answer right. Lumonati's, the home to Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at lumonati's.com. You like Lumonati's, Susan?
Of course.
Oh, who doesn't? All right, well, stay on the line. Michael's going to chat with you and figure it out. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Then we're going to have the real headlines after this on 720 WGN.
Now from your theater screen to the radio waves, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs.
You heard it, 720 WGN. You know what that intro means. It's time for Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Blake, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, John. I'm doing pretty well. Enjoying Friday night. You know, it's nice that I'm on when it's not like 2 in the morning right now, because it's a nice, relaxing Friday in for me.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying it.
Hey, do you think we need to update that intro anymore? Any other ideas? We need some more bangs and whistles? Know,
I think I'm good. I think we should let it ride a little bit. Let's see what others think. But I'm a fan. Thank you, and thanks to Mike. I appreciate that.
Yeah. You got it.
It really stressed his battle there, his wits there. It took him all about 14 minutes to make. All right, Blake Stubbs, let's talk about
seconds.
I was going to say it actually took a commercial break once to do it. We're talking about a couple of movies that came out this weekend. Which one you want to talk about first?
Let's start with Rambo Last Blood.
Yeah, so this is, I didn't even, like, this is how out of it I am. I didn't even know they were making another Rambo movie till you pitched this to me.
Well, so here's the thing. A big part of me wishes they hadn't made another Rambo movie, right, if I'm being honest with you. Now, if you recall, the Rambo character is one of Sylvester Stallone's biggest names. Rocky Balboa is the other one everybody knows him from. You know, he's had great success as an action star that really kicked off with First Blood. And by the way, First Blood is an excellent film. If you haven't watched it lately, go back and rewatch it, especially now. I think that, you know, the public consciousness about the battles that veterans deal with outside of service is at the forefront of a lot of political discussion these days. I think First Blood is an excellent film if you want to sit down and then have a big debate afterwards. But Rambo Last Blood, this is the fifth film in the Rambo iconography, or the Rambo lexicon, I guess, as far as films go. And this one feels forced, very forced. It feels very tone deaf as far as the political climate in the country goes. It's displaying things that I think are going to offend a lot of people when they see this movie. The border wall is featured prominently in multiple drone shots. Yeah, Rambo crosses the border into Mexico on several occasions. Someone that he was very close to. Now, keep in mind, this is Rambo. Rambo is supposed to be this perfect soldier who isn't really able to get close to anyone and has a lot of demons that he has to deal with while also being an agent of warfare. This is taking place 10 years after the last film, which was just called Rambo, and is one of the most violent films I've ever seen to this day. Actually, it was 11 years ago, but the whole, he's now aged and he's cut his hair, which is kind of jarring because it just looks like Sly Stallone. I mean, Rambo in every other film has always had longer hair, and I know that's such a quibble, but it's kind of like a staple for the character.
Mm-hmm.
And he, this just feels a bit gratuitous. It just feels a little tone deaf. It's a mess. I mean, it's a 90-minute film that has tons of pacing issues. And I found myself not really following any momentum that it was trying to build. And then finally you hit the third act, and a lot of what you see in the trailer, which is, I jokingly referred to it along with many others on Twitter, as like Home Stallone. I mean, it's like Rambo setting booby traps for a bunch of cartel goons that are going to try to come kill him. And boy, do they get the violent, gory treatment. It is brutal. But I wouldn't put it up there with, the likes of the previous Rambo, which I felt at least captured what the character was all about. I actually think Rambo talks too much in this movie, if I'm being quite honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been very man of few words and a man of a lot of action. In this film, he gets a lot of words in, and then he goes into full action. So I don't know. This just felt different. I feel like I believe the author, David Morrell, has practically disowned the film today on Twitter. But one thing he pointed out in the thread that he started, and I agree with him, is Sly could have been playing John Smith in this movie. It didn't have to be Rambo. It could have been anybody. Mm-hmm. And I would have accepted it like any of these other action films he's been doing outside of the Creed franchise, which, by the way, I am a fan of Sly Stallone, the actor, when he really puts it on and goes all out. I feel like this is just another action movie feather in his cap, and it's not even really remotely that interesting. I feel like this one's a skip it, or wait till it's on demand and watch it for $4.
Do you think they made it a Rambo thing just because that would be the name that would get people to put their butts in the chairs?
Well, I think what happened here, yes, but I also think what happened was when they set out to make this movie, I think they were dead set on a real Rambo story. And I think that they tried to really modernize it and make it something that took it into avenues that just pulled it away from what the core of Rambo is all about. Now, look, again, I'm a fan of Sly Stallone. I know he loves to write for his characters. He's written for Rocky. He's always got a hand in the production side of things, and he's good at that. This one's a misfire for me. That's the long and short of it. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't enjoying this movie as much as I, deep down, as much as I had hoped I would, because I'm like, when you tell me it's Rambo Last Blood, I have all these ideas of what I'm going to get, and what I got was just like milk toast. I didn't really enjoy it.
All right, Blockbuster Blake, hang on the line. We're going to talk about Ad Astra after this here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, that's the theme from Rambo, of course. Just got finished talking about Blake's review. For those just joining us, Blake, what are you going to give us? Stars, thumbs up, thumbs down? What you saying, just to recap?
Well, as far as Rambo goes, it's on the lower end. I don't really use the star scale. I just tell you if I liked it or I didn't like it. And I think people know I love movies. I like the experience. I sat perplexed during Rambo Last Blood, and by the end of it, I was like, oh, good, it's over.
So
and that's a rare occurrence for me.
Yeah.
That's a big no. It did not. I don't know, and I'm a fan of previous Rambo films. This one just was not it.
You don't got to make excuses for it, Blake. You don't got to justify it. Just it's a no.
No, if you watch the Rocky films, you know how Rocky V is always the least liked of all the Rocky films?
Yeah.
This was the fifth Rambo film, so I'm just throwing that out there. It's kind of feels the same way compared to its predecessors.
Yeah.
They all have their own personality. This one just felt like, I didn't like it at all.
Is there any good fifth movie out there on any series of
good
films?
Fifth.
I don't know. I mean, episode 5 of Star Wars is great, but it's not really the fifth one that was released. Anyways,
no.
Let's talk Ad Astra. I got another no shocker to you. I heard about this once it premiered at the Venice Film Festival, but I kind of it went under my radar earlier in the year. Tell us, it's got Brad Pitt in it, and what'd you think?
It stars Brad Pitt, and is a supporting cast, including Tommy Lee Jones, Ruth Negga, Donald Sutherland, just to name a few. This is actually a beautiful film. This is a very deep character study for Pitt to tackle as an actor. And he's also a producer on this film, so I know that, you know, from his standpoint, this is like Brad Pitt's movie. He made a big splash this year already playing Cliff Booth in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But that was more of like a supporting role, which is strange for Brad Pitt. He is a star. This is a complete starring vehicle for him. And oddly enough, it takes place among the stars. This film, the trailers didn't really give me too much. They gave me just enough to intrigue me. And then while I was watching the film, they took me places I didn't expect. Without spoiling anything, the general premise of this movie is that Brad Pitt plays this astronaut named Roy McBride in the near future. Now, when I say near future, think we've explored beyond Mars at this point. So we're going places, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And his father was the leader of an expedition many years earlier, and they went missing. They don't know exactly where they are. They know the general area, and so Pitt is charged with finding him. Now, there's a reason he needs to do that. I don't want to spoil anything, but I will say that the opening scene in this movie, I thought it was a stunner. I thought it set a great tone for the visuals of what we were going to get throughout the rest of the movie. I think that the film's character development for Pitt's character is outstanding. I think his performance backs that up 100%. I think the only complaint that I came away from this film with was that there are some really good names in this, like Ruth Negga. I wish she had more to do in the movie. Donald Sutherland, I wish he had more to do in the movie. Now, Tommy Lee Jones gets a really good part to play with here, but I have to be really honest with you. This is going to be one of the better films out right now that you could go see. I think that it's definitely worth your time. It's 2 hours long. Know that going in, but know that you're going to get a little more action than you think, but you're also going to get a pretty cerebral film that delves deep into family and a sense of loneliness and finding oneself, especially in a character that when you first meet him, you think he's so sure. And I think that's cool. I think that Pitt played this character in a very, very astute way, and I think audiences will really like this film. I mean, critics are adoring this. Like you said, John, you didn't really know much about it until it debuted at Venice and generated a lot of buzz. I think it was Rian Johnson, who actually directed Star Wars The Last Jedi, pointed out that he felt this film was akin to watching something like 2001 mixed with Apocalypse Now. So there you go. I think that's an interesting take, and I would back that up and say Ryan's got a good point. And I enjoyed this one. I'd actually like to see this film again and really pay attention to the finer details that they put on screen.
Awesome stuff. All right, Blockbuster Blake, I'm going to put you on hold one more time. We're going to take another commercial break, but I want you mentioned Tommy Lee Jones, and that just made my mind go somewhere where we like to go. Let's bring it back to Chicago, because I finally showed Enrique the Fugitive. And it got me thinking, this is just last weekend. It was actually on like normal television, so we had to watch it with the commercials and everything. Still was great. I love The Fugitive. 312-981-7200. We're just going to do a quick segment after this. And, Blake, you prepare your favorites. Movies filmed in Chicago. 720 WGN. Thanks, Michael. Let's go to the movies. Oh, yeah. 312-981-7200. Joined by Blockbuster Blake just here for a couple more minutes. Blake, you said Tommy Lee Jones. That got my mind going to The Fugitive. Best movies filmed in Chicago. And we want you to join that conversation. 312-981-7200. And it's interesting because Chicago has had a revival in its film industry since the 80s. Before when movies really weren't allowed to be filmed here. Till about the 80s, till Jane Byrne allowed it to happen. And so I've got a top five list, and to me it's an obvious list. I guess we'll just start plowing through this. I think that on either list, The Dark Knight has got to be up there somewhere, correct?
Yeah, 100%. Specifically Lower Wacker Drive, the big chase sequence, I think, is a big cinematic moment, at least from the aughts, I guess is what we're going to call them. That film in particular was definitely on my list in the top five, 100%.
Okay. I've got Backdraft as number four on my list. This is just a quick list I put together during the commercial break. It's featured well. I mean, it's a quintessential story of any firehouse, I guess you could say, but it has a real Chicago feel to it.
Definitely does, especially when I believe it's is it I'm trying William Baldwin.
Yeah,
he lives underneath the L.
Yes,
and when he can't start his car, it's like I'm sure a lot of Chicagoans can relate to that incident. The other thing is, and whether or not you like Backdraft, I'm going to put it out there, folks. Doesn't matter. John and I are both the sons of firefighters, yes. So we love this movie. We grew up around this movie, but I do think that the Chicago Fire Department is. Definitely looks cool on screen in this movie, 100%. So, yeah, I would agree with you there.
I'm going number three, Fugitive, which I talked about, which it is so Chicago. That movie is awesome. Not only does it show all the downtown scenes, because it does show a lot of downtown, there's the north side, which is where he lives and where his wife is murdered. That's not a spoiler alert. It happens in the first few minutes. And then, if you haven't seen Fugitive, and also prominently displays the South Side, the Pullman neighborhood, some parts of the South Side as well. And I think it just kind of really shows Chicago in the winter. It really feels Chicago.
I was going to say, if you wanted to talk quintessential Chicago movies, if The Fugitive isn't on your list, I would have questions for you, sir.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, definitely. And by the way, Andy Davis, I believe just recently, who directed the film, did a Q&A at Music Box. They just showed it, a film print of it during their 90th celebration, I believe it is.
Yeah, I think it was 90 years they did.
I would say always be on the lookout to see that in a film print.
Yeah.
I did a few years back at Ebert Fest, Roger Ebert's film festival in Champaign, and I was blown away by how good that film looks.
Yeah.
It is one of the best shot films as far as seeing Chicago in a cinematic way.
It's awesome.
It's excellent.
My number two, I was for two and one, I don't even know which order to go in, but I'm going to go number two for Hoop Dreams. Real look at our city. And obviously a lot of it filmed in the Cabrini Green neighborhoods. Obviously Hoop Dreams was meant to be a half hour, documentary for PBS, I believe, and turned into one of the greatest movies of all time, whether you're talking documentaries or real ones. It's incredible. And man, Chicago, you get a real sense for, how a lot of people live in this city that are often forgotten.
I would say that is an excellent pick strictly because of it's part love letter to Chicago, but also love letter to the people. And that I think is director Steve James to a T. That's one of the reasons why Roger Ebert loved him so much. It's also, if you want to see more of Steve James's work, Life Itself, which was Ebert's memoir, was also done as a documentary called Life Itself, and Steve James put that film together. His work is excellent, and Hoop Dreams, I would say, is the first thing you show anybody of his work. And it definitely, as far as Chicago goes, Hoop Dreams would be very high on, should be high on everyone's list.
And my number one is Blues Brothers, and I don't know how you go against it.
Yes.
It's the most Chicago thing out there, and it's just, it goes all over the city, kind of like Fugitive, Southside, north suburbs, displaying through the mall, as we talked about at the top of the show, which someone tried to replicate today in real life, and it's just incredible. Did I leave anything out, Blake, that you have? Really quickly, we had about 30 seconds, another minute.
Two out there. One, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that is one of the big ones. But also, I'm going to throw an honorable mention to a film called Adventures in Babysitting. It has some pretty big Chicago landmarks in it, specifically in the third act. If that's a movie you haven't seen, John, I highly recommend it. Look for a young Bradley Whitford in the film. And I think you'll enjoy his performance. He's not a very likable guy, but he is funny in the film, I think. I'd throw a little love to Adventures in Babysitting.
Can I throw one more in there?
Of course.
Running Scared.
Running Scared?
Billy Crystal?
Know. Running Scared.
What?
Two Chicago cops chasing down
Billy Crystal plays a Chicago cop?
Yes, Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
And let me
let him Google.
Gregory Hines.
Gregory Hines.
Yeah.
They come down from the ceiling of the Illinois Center.
Oh, the Thompson Center. That cool building,
they
the glass
wall. They down, and they have a shootout in the elevators and in the first walkway. It is a great, great, funny movie about Chicago. The only problem I have with it is there's a chase scene on the CTA elevated tracks and in the subway. And if you don't know Chicago, it looks fine. But if you know Chicago, you know that there's no possible way they could get from one point in the film, in the chase scene, to the other one
yes.
that quickly. Because, first of all, it's in the opposite direction.
Right, right. Hey, Blake, I know you got to get going. We're actually getting a few phone calls. Can you hang around just for one little more segment after the news?
Sure thing.
Right.
And just so everyone knows, and they don't steal my idea, if you're if you've seen Running Scared, Billy Crystal has a great Blackhawks jersey costume that he wears in the film. That is my Halloween costume this year. Nobody take that out.
All right, sounds
just throwing
good.
That out there.
Blake is going to hang on for like 10 more minutes. We got to get to the news, though. Keep on those getting those calls and texts in. Most quintessential Chicago movie that's filmed out there, 312-981-7200. 720 WGN, broadcasting live from Chicago. We're at 303 East Wacker, and I thought I was going to do a quick three-minute segment, Blake, on the best Chicago films, and of course, we were mistaken. People chiming in all over the place. Really quickly, I want to get to Clyde, who's been on hold. Clyde, you're mentioning one that Blake mentioned. You're a big fan of what?
Well, I was going to bring up Running Scared as well, but then when he said there was a young Bradley Whitford in Babysitting, there's also a young Vincent D'Onofrio in it.
Oh.
That is correct. Yes. He plays
the Thor hammer too, or whatever.
Yeah. So there's a young girl in Adventures in Babysitting who's obsessed with Thor. It's her favorite superhero.
Yeah.
And they meet a mechanic played by Vincent D'Onofrio who genuinely looks like he would be the spitting image of Thor if they
right.
made a Thor film in the 1980s. And she fully believes that he's Thor. And it's a touching little scene. It's a little harsh at first, but he comes around. Yeah, that's a good pick, young Vincent D'Onofrio.
Clyde, where are you calling from?
I live in Clarendon Hills.
Ah, that's where I was. I spent the first few years of my life.
Love your show, guys.
Thanks, Clyde. Appreciate it. 312-981-7200. Blake, we got a few more texts. My Bodyguard, a 1980 movie that was filmed at Lakeview High School, apparently. That's different than Bodyguard.
Yeah.
That's not the one that we all know, right? With, what's her face? Why can't
with
I not
Whitney
think?
Houston
yes,
and Kevin Costner?
Yeah.
No. This is Adam Baldwin and Matt Dillon.
Oh, different.
Both in this movie. Yeah. It's a high school teen comedy drama type film. But that was filmed definitely in Illinois. Yeah.
Someone also chimed in with Primal Fear and Transformers.
Yeah.
Primal Fear, I don't know if we've talked about before, but it rings a bell. Was that Edward Norton?
It was Edward Norton's breakout film role with opposite Richard Gere and Laura Linney, where he plays a young man who appears to have some sort of dark secret after a murder of a member of the clergy is committed. And it's a haunting performance. Honestly, it's one of the few films I've ever seen where I thought, if somebody could adapt that to the stage, you would make whoever the actor is, and at this point it wouldn't be Edward Norton because it's supposed to be a young man who's like in his teens, maybe his early 20s, an absolute star. Or a young woman. I mean, you could probably rework it at this point mm-hmm. and do it a completely different way. But I think if you've never seen Primal Fear, watch it for Edward Norton alone. Although Richard Gere does not phone it in. He's outstanding in the film as well. The movie belongs to Edward Norton, however, 100%.
815 texts in with Groundhog Day. And I get it was filmed in Woodstock, but to me it's not pretending to be Chicago, so I don't think it fits in this category. I guess you could say that about Batman, that's Gotham City, but, like, that's so obvious Chicago. You know, Woodstock, while that square looks great and it is a very iconic part of our city and suburban areas, doesn't quite have that Chicago feel. But this texture also mentioned Road to Perdition, which certainly does.
Yes, which definitely does, especially a period piece about Chicago. The gangsters that ran rampant in the first half of the 20th century, and that film is just a beautiful, dark film. If you've never seen Road to Perdition, between the score, the cinematography, the acting, the direction, everything about that movie clicks. And you know what? I know everybody loves Tom Hanks in the film. I certainly do. You got to watch Paul Newman if you're going to watch it for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
He's outstanding in the film. 100, yeah. Definitely back up anybody who says Road to Perdition.
Heidemann wants to chime in. What do you got, Mike?
As much as I love Road to Perdition, if we were forgetting about one that just stands above the rest, what about Rookie of the Year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Henry I met him about a billion times, too. Thomas Ian Nichols.
He's a great guy. He's a musician who plays around Chicago. Yeah. And he's the freak accident 12-year-old who got to play for the Chicago Cubs in Rookie of the Year. That's a
John Candy is in it. It's great. The guy from Wonder, David Stern's in it, right?
Daniel Stern.
He gets locked in the locker room. He's chewing the gum. Oh, my God.
Gary Busey,
that's right.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
Someone else texted in, Blake, Continental Divide, which I had never heard of. It's a John Belushi movie, and I have no idea. I've never heard of it.
Oh, well, there's homework, remember? Okay,
yeah.
If you're tuning in and hearing me for the first time, there's always a great listener out there who will send in something, or it'll be Roger Badish. It'll be one of them.
Right.
Who will give me something that I'm going to take away and try to watch this week. And then if it comes up next time, I'm going to bring it up. But, yeah, it's about a hard-nosed Chicago journalist who's an unlikely affair with an Eagle researcher. Well, it's John Belushi, so, I mean, sign me up.
Right. And I now know I've heard of this, and it's when we talked to Bill Wallace a couple months ago, and he told the story of John Belushi and how he trained and worked with him, and unfortunately found him in L.A., unfortunately overdosed, but how he was working on him, and one of the movies he said that he was working on him with was Continental Divide, so there you go.
Continental Divide.
By the way, we just got one from the 630 that I can't believe I didn't mention, and it's Uncle Buck. From when he's coughing and he does the clapper and he turns on the Wrigley Field lights and all the way to his trek out to the suburbs. Yeah, very Chicagoland feel there.
Yep. And you know what? I think we would be remiss if we neglect the work of Chicago native Michael Mann, who directed Heat. Is probably the movie so many people jump to immediately. But for me, it's Thief, which is a Chicago film. It was shot, I believe, almost entirely in Chicago in 1980, maybe late 79. It stars James Caan, Willie Nelson's in that movie. Thief is a must-see, especially if you want to relive Chicago back in that late 70s, early 80s era. He also came back to Chicago to film Public Enemies with Johnny Depp in the late aughts, or maybe that was the early 2010s here. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Michael Mann, Chicago native, didn't forget where he came from. He's made a couple movies here, but I would point people toward Heat or Thief any day of the week. Heat's an L.A. movie. Yeah. We're not talking L.A. movies.
People
Chicago movies.
Chiming in with The Untouchables, St. Elmo's Fire, a lot of Blues Brothers. Feel the Dreams. I don't know if there's a scene in Chicago. I know it's out in Iowa, and then they go to Boston at one point. I've seen that movie a bunch. I'm probably wrong, but I don't remember Chicago being in that. But a lot of other ones, John Hughes, of course, and all of his classics.
John Hughes-iverse. Yeah, definitely go down that road.
It's a little suburban, but doesn't quite have the feel for the city as much as I feel like. But Home Alone, of course, got to mention that. Of course, yes. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Can't forget that. All right, we got to get going,
absolutely,
Blake. Otherwise, we're going to keep on going on this track for a while. Blake, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me, as always.
Yeah.
And have a great night.
Yeah, we will talk soon. Plenty more coming up on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, happy Friday night. Before we get to the real headlines, we're going to play another round of Finish the Headline. So, 312-981-7200. We've got another Lou Malnati's gift certificate to give away this evening. If you can, finish the headline. We got to trim this little open up, Mike. That's the weirdest part of the song. That's where it should kick in. Come on, Heidemann.
I kind of like the opening.
That little dung digga dong dung
gives people a chance to call in and get ready for the game ahead.
Gives them time to emotionally prepare. Roger, you got the real headlines ready to go, so you can play a little game of Finish the Headlines.
Alrighty.
Right? Okay, so 312-91-7200, if you want to win a pizza, you just got to finish the headline. So the U.S. Secret Service and Crime Stoppers of El Paso, sounds like a Depeche Mode lyric, issued a warning on Tuesday about increase in counterfeit money in the El Paso region.
Ooh.
The region hit hard by phony money imprinted with, I can't tell you, and I'll give it away. So here is how you can tell that this money is counterfeit. It's pretty obvious. Roger Badish, any guesses?
Monopoly money. That just
What's the character's name? The captain or Mr. Moneybags or whatever? Is the...
You're guessing that it's actually Monopoly Money. No, that is not correct. It is not Monopoly Money.
Darn.
I know. Kathy, you're on WGN. How you doing tonight, Kathy?
I'm doing really well. I'm always happy when you're on.
Oh, thank you very much, Kathy. That makes me happy. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Island Park.
All right. Sounds good. You don't have to sound disappointed by that.
No, I just did that whole thing on the movies, but I don't know. I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off was in Highland Park.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You just sounded so sad about it. I'm like, it's okay. Be proud of where you're from, girl.
Well, I know. It's just like, you know, you wouldn't include the suburban movies. You were like,
No. Sorry, I love the suburbs. I grew up in Downers Grove. I just meant, to feel Chicago. You know how, like, when you film in the suburbs, all the suburbs have a similar feel to them all over the country, that if it's, like, quintessential Chicago, you got to see downtown, I guess. But what do I know, Kathy? I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. Okay, let's finish the headline here. All right, so it's counterfeit money in Texas, but it's really obvious why. Can you guess how you'd know that this was counterfeit money? What would, like, really... It's not Monopoly money. It has nothing to do with the color of the bill, either.
Maybe for the motion pictures or movies or something that was on a set.
Yeah, no, that's not quite it. But you hang there, Kathy. Don't hang up. I don't want you to end. I'm going to give you a clue. So, I'm trying to give you a clue without giving it away. So, everything looks similar except there's something quite obvious. Roger, I don't know if you have any other guesses here too. We got some other callers chiming in.
Probably a different face. On the bills.
So like not one of our presidents?
No, a fake president, maybe.
a fake president.
Well, I mean, if it's not one of our regular presidents, it's got to be a fake president.
Right. That is a great guess.
How about Howdy Doody's picture?
If it was just another human, no. No, it is not Howdy Doody on there. It doesn't have to do with the photo. It doesn't have to do with the denomination.
The color.
And not the color. Kathy, any other guesses here?
Maybe a different language?
Yes, it's written in a different language. Kathy wins the Lumel Nottis gift certificate. Yes, and it is so... I don't even know why we have to look for this. Half of them are written, the $50 counterfeits have Russian writing on them. It's just so clearly the characters aren't even in standard, well, not English, because characters are across all, but they're not in Latin sort of love languages. They're just not A's, B's, and C's. It's just different things. And then there's Chinese symbols on one of them, too. Like, that should be an obvious clue that it is not...
You're really looking at the bill. So I'm going to have to take the pizza and bring it in to you guys, because I know you have the late-night pizza there.
Oh, now, round of applause for Kathy. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Kathy giving back. All right, Kathy, stay on the line. And thank you for listening, Kathy. We appreciate that.
I love it when you're on. Thank you for being on.
Kathy's wonderful. All right, stay on the line, Kathy. Michael's going to hook you up with that pizza, then apparently he's going to come right back to us. Quick commercial break, then the news on 720 WGN. Ooh. Hey, everyone. It's Saturday morning. Roger's bobbing his head here. Mr. Mike Heidemann's easing us into this Saturday morning. What was the inspiration behind this? Just you wanted to, you just were like, as much saxophone as possible?
I just typed in saxophone.
Is this Kenny G?
Solo.
Kenny G bringing us in, baby.
This is Dave Kaz on the sax.
It's
a Corey Wong song.
He's got that sax going good. 12:06 here on this Saturday morning.
you were going with the flow, the tempo of the song. 10:06.
Yeah.
WGN.
Here we are. It's the 21st of September, but it's July in my soul, baby. That's how hot things are. We're 18 floors above Wacker Drive along the Chicago River. 50,000 watts, the mega ship here, 36 states in Canada right now. Or is it 38? I forget how many states we go to.
Well, it depends on the atmosphere and how good the skipping is of the signal.
Well, I've been skipping my whole life, Roger. as flamboyant as I can.
So that's all right. We love it.
Hey, every couple of weeks, we love to look out to the heavens where our radio signal goes on forever and ever, and we like to wonder, what's up with space?
Now it's time for Mike Wall from Space.com with What's Up with Space?
How's it going, Mike? Thanks for joining us once again.
Sure. No, that, like, the intro keeps getting better. Now there's, like, an echo aspect to it. Yeah, it's just layering on the effect.
It's nice that you say that, because while it was playing, Michael got in my ear and said, boy, I need to change that up. That's terrible. So next time you're on, we anticipate Michael to put a little bit more effort into it, okay?
Yeah, but I would still prefer that to the saxophone.
Yeah. Yes.
The kind of thing. So,
yeah. All right. Well, we'll work a little saxophone into your introduction. Mike, thanks for joining us. Mike Reitzer, one of the editors at space.com. You guys do incredible work. And I don't know if it's just because I'm more cognizant of it or that you're one of my bookmarks now, but I feel like space is like really a big part of our news cycles now. Obviously, we just a couple of weeks ago, we were already going to talk anyways. And then, of course, we had what happened with India's moon expedition. Right. And obviously, just in Congress this week, they were talking about space. I mean, maybe it's always been at the forefront of your mind, but I don't know. It seems to be kind of going through a renaissance. I don't know if it has to do with the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, but a lot of people are focused on this stuff now.
Yeah, I see that too. And yeah, I mean, part of it was the Apollo anniversary stuff. That was just a really big deal. 50 years is a time for us to kind of look back and take stock of things. So that was a big deal. But it's not just that. It's been building for a while. And I mean, part of it's this. We've like talked about a lot of this stuff before. The whole exoplanet revolution that we've seen in the last few years. We're really starting to learn more and more about how many habitable planets are out there. And then you've got all the private space flight stuff happening with these space billionaires, Elon Musk, Bezos, these people wanting to colonize Mars, get us off Earth in a meaningful way. That stuff's really building up steam. And then part of it too is this 2024 moon push that the Trump administration is really gotten behind and is like pushing that hard, and us wanting to put people back on the moon by 2024 and build a moon orbiting space station. And then all the Space Force stuff, yeah, all of it's kind of coming together. So, yeah, all of it's been, like, building for a while. You're not just imagining things, I don't think.
All right, that's good. I mean, there's other things I am, but in terms of this, I'm glad that I'm right on. You mentioned 2024, and that was kind of what was happening in a hearing in the House of Representatives, one of the committees, earlier this week. Here's the, you know, you led with this headline in the article that you wrote, putting astronauts on the moon in 2024 is a tall order, says NASA. Your subhead is, but nobody said it was supposed to be easy. I guess my question is, why is it hard? Because we've already did it, and we did it with, like, the technology that's less than what our iPhone is.
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's something a lot of people ask. And during that, like, actual hearing, yeah, I mean, some of the Congress people asked that very same question. Now, we like did this during Apollo, and from when Kennedy kind of laid that challenge down to when it happened, it was just 8 years. So how come it's taking so long now? It's a really good question. And I mean, I think that the main answer is that we were way more risk tolerant back then, just because of the environment that it was. It was a Cold War space race, and we viewed beating the Soviets to the moon as like a national imperative for lots of reasons. And so we are willing to actually take these risks, because those are risky missions, you know.
Yeah.
Sending those astronauts to the moon, there was a decent chance that at least like the first couple missions were not going to go very well, you know. But that was a risk we were willing to take. And nowadays, we're much more squeamish about those sort of things. I mean, NASA is institutionally, I think we as a culture sort of are too. And there's just not that same drive. There's not that sense that we have to do this and we have to drop everything and we have to take every possible risk to beat the Soviets. And so, yeah, things just take longer, and then that cultural shift happens, and we just expect things to take longer, and it's hard to change that. And so, yeah, that just sort of adds up over time.
You know, we had a couple Apollo missions that we didn't do. Is there just like a Saturn V we can dust off and an old LEM and just like you shoot those on up there?
there are some sitting in museums, and people asked about that during that hearing too.
Wait, really? I was being sarcastic, but
well, they were not like it was sort of half joking, but they're like, is there any hardware that we can get that we didn't use back then that could speed this process up? Because you know we're really not buying this 2024 thing. We don't think it's going to happen. So how could we accelerate this? And yeah, so it was like half joking, but yeah, that's people do wonder, you know, is there any way we could kind of get at that technology that's already worked once and just repurpose it or resurrect it or something? But yeah, that's what's happening. NASA is just building a whole new giant rocket that's going to be even more powerful than the Saturn V. And that's part of the reason it's taking so long, is because that giant rocket, which is called the Space Launch System, it's just been beset by funding overruns and been like a bunch of delays. It still hasn't flown on a test flight yet. So that's generally a lot of skepticism about this 2024 deadline.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned kind of our tolerance for risk. And I you know, obviously we lost the three astronauts on Apollo 1 on a simple, you know, plugs out test on the pad. By the grace of God, we didn't lose 13 somehow.
That was very close.
Yeah, that was a lot closer than I think people realize. But I think that there was, and even you saw this after one, obviously it halted the Apollo program for some time, and there were big congressional hearings led by, I believe even the senator out of Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken, that name is escaping me right now, Senator Mondale, who later ran for president. Anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself or behind myself somewhere, and I guess what I'm getting at is, I think that there's really no margin for error. We spent a lot of money on NASA. We obviously lost two space shuttles, including one this century. And I think that without that drive, as you mentioned, boy, NASA has a fine line if anything goes wrong, whether it's humans or whether it's, you know, equipment as well.
Yeah, and this is hard. This is hard to do. You know, Earth is a big planet, and actually getting off of Earth with its strong gravitational pull, you need a lot of energy. And the only way we know how to do that is to do a controlled explosion, which is basically that's what a rocket launch is. Mm-hmm. And if the tiniest thing goes wrong during a rocket launch, and some of that energy kind of leaks out in a way that you don't want it to, then that's a disaster. And so there's so many things that can go wrong, and things sometimes do go wrong. You know, people make mistakes, things don't get built right all the time. We think we understand certain conditions and that we don't. It's just going to happen. And that's something that we have to come to terms with, I think, as you really think seriously about putting a colony on the moon and going on to Mars and maybe actually like settling Mars in a real way. Like, people are going to die doing mm-hmm. these things. Like, we just need to accept that that's going to happen, and we can't be scared off by the first accident into just not doing anything ever again, because this is going to happen.
Yeah, and it's you mentioned, you know, people messing up, and I agree that that's a lot of times what it is, but it's also like they talk about this a lot with Apollo 1, like kind of the failure of imagination, that there's also problems out there that we haven't even thought of.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really important point. And that's something that people need to kind of take into account. You know, space is an extreme environment. It's a very diverse environment. It's a weird environment. And there's lots of things that go on there that we don't fully understand. So that's maybe like the first thing we should check at the door when we try to design these sorts of missions, is our cockiness.
Yeah.
And our sort of belief that we know everything. And I mean, if you're an engineer, you're sort of used to kind of knowing how things work, because you do equations and these things work, and you like test things in the atmosphere and they work. But you know, yeah, there are conditions that you can't simulate, or there are conditions that you can't anticipate and you can't test for. So yeah, you just need to be open-minded about these things and know there's some things that we just aren't going to be able to plan for until we actually encounter them. And that's where part of the danger comes in.
So it'll be hard to get to the moon by 2024. Obviously, we're not going to land humans on this thing, but I found another interesting story that you just wrote about chasing down a comet and sending something to it. Walk us through this one.
Well, yeah, this is like the second, well, it's probably an interstellar object in our own solar system. I don't know if people like remember the whole like Oumuamua thing when we got our first interstellar visitor like a couple of years ago. It zoomed through the inner solar system. It's still within our solar system now, and it's cruising outward. But it's this weird thing that's like flat and kind of shaped like a pancake, and it does all these weird things, and it's the first object that was ever confirmed to kind of visit our solar system from afar. Well, this thing, just a couple weeks ago, somebody discovered, like, what's probably, like, another object that's from another solar system. And, like, you can tell these things based on their trajectory and their speed. You know, they're coming at these wacky angles, and they're moving really fast. So they're not, like, gravitationally bound to the sun. It's pretty obvious. So this thing is still coming toward the sun. It hasn't yet gone around the sun and kind of looped out and gone and started heading out toward the outer solar system like a Muamua is. So this like new interstellar comet, which is called Borisov, because that's the name of the Russian amateur astronomer who discovered it. It's a real opportunity for astronomers to sort of study it and say, well, are comets in other solar systems similar to the ones that we get? Are they made of the same thing? So we can actually study. And there's some people who proposed, well, you know, if we really wanted to, we could launch a probe to this thing and get up close looks at it. That would be really hard. It's moving really fast. We wouldn't be able to launch the mission until 2030 because of all the weird orbital dynamics stuff you have to kind of take into account, and wouldn't get there till 2045. But it's possible. And so yeah, what's really exciting about this stuff is there's like two of these just in the last couple of years, and there's another study that found that there was like a meteor that slammed into Earth in 2014. And they've sort of backtracked its trajectory, and there's some people who think that one was interstellar too.
Oh wow!
So that's three objects that we're talking about. We're almost certainly interstellar, and we're going to see more of these things. So if the kind of take home message is, as our instruments get better, and there's one big telescope that's going to come online in like a year or two in South America that's going to be really good at spotting these things. We should be ready because we're going to see lots more interstellar objects, and we're going to have a chance to actually study them. And I mean, maybe if like we have a mission plan, then we could have some probes ready to go to actually launch towards some of these things. And we could send a space probe out to explore a comet or an asteroid or like whatever the like next thing is from another solar system. It's really cool to think about.
So this one's so crazy because this one's obviously very far away, right?
Yeah.
And it's 3 feet long. How the heck are they seeing it? Are they sure it's not just some dust on the lens?
Well, that was that like meteor. That was the interstellar meteor that they think hit in 2014.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's vaporized. They don't know how like big this Borisov comet is. Their estimates it like might be like a half mile wide.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was heck did they see that? But that makes a lot more sense. It would help to read your articles more detailed as opposed to being like, well, Mike's going to tell me about it in a little bit. I don't need to read the whole thing. All right, tell you what, we're going to take a quick commercial break. You can stick around for a little bit longer, right?
Yeah, sure.
All right, we'll talk a couple more stories after this on 720 WGN.
Time to look back up at the sky, because we're back with What's Up with Space.
Yes! All right, that was pretty good work by Michael Heidemann. Well, you can tell he's not listening to what we're talking about because he spent the last 15 minutes doing that. But Heidemann, nice work, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Time well spent.
And I'm finding the conversation very, very exciting and
good.
And intelligent. I don't spend as much time as you think on this.
I know, that would take me hours to do, but Mike whipped that out pretty quickly. Was that your voice, Michael? Or did you get Duffy to do it?
I actually needed to hire a guy on Craigslist, and he came in during the segment just to do that voiceover.
Oh, thanks. As long as it's out of your wallet. Okay, Mike Wall from space.com. Hey, by the way, I got a text from someone who wanted me to ask you. I had no idea anything about this, and if you don't either, just give it a hard pass. But apparently something about the U.S. military leaking this UFO video, and apparently the former guitarist of Blink-182, Tom DeLonge, had a big role in this. Do you know anything about this story?
Yeah. Like, remember, like, a couple of years ago, there was that big, like, New York Times Politico scoop about those videos of the UFOs that, like, Navy pilots captured on Well, Tom, like, DeLonge is a member. He's one of the driving forces behind this group called To the Stars Academy. And they're basically their stated objective is to try to investigate like UFO phenomena, to try to like discern if we can. I mean, first of all, like, just say what they are, what UFOs are. And second, if they are alien spacecraft, can we back engineer the technology or use the technology in some way?
Okay.
So they posted those videos, and I think that they worked to kind of get them out to the public a little bit. It's kind of a convoluted story, but they're interested in these videos and trying to see what they are and if we can use them in some way. And it's just sort of weird that like lead singer of Blink-182 yes. is involved in it.
Yeah, that's an interesting little twist, which actually makes me way more interested than I would be normally. Now, you and I have talked about, we both believe, and your beliefs take way more credence than mine in this, that there is something out there that would be absurd not to believe that somewhere there's something, some form of life. We don't know where, how advanced, we don't know what it looks like, all that. Have you seen these videos? Do you have any belief in it? Do you think that we've had spaceships come and fly nearby?
Yeah, they are. I mean, they are interesting. I mean, they show weird behavior by things we don't know what they are. I mean, they are bona fide UFOs. People don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just because we don't know what we're seeing on these screens doesn't kind of justify the leap to say that they are definitely alien spacecraft or even probably alien spacecraft. Just from like my perspective, I think that the bar for that, like the evidence bar, is going to be really high.
Yeah.
Like when you're talking about such an amazing kind of moment in human history and in scientific history, it would have to be like kind of slam dunk. And there are people that you talked about these things. It's just sort of weird that like the most convincing evidence that we're ever able to muster is always just like right on like the edges of our detection capabilities. And it sort of has always been that way, right? Like, I mean, when it was just black and white photographs, the like best evidence is a blurry picture. And now that there's cell phones everywhere, we still don't have anything better than a blurry picture.
Right. It's always the blurry picture in the night sky. Not that we take, even with our phones, we don't take the best photos at night, but with all the great, you know, DSLR cameras out there, we still don't have anything more concrete. So, that's always my, that burden of proof is a little high.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not trying to like dismiss what the Navy pilots saw. I think that we should investigate them and try to figure out what they are. I just think that the chances are that it'll turn out to be like a mundane explanation. I think that those chances are better than it actually being an alien spacecraft. I would like love to be wrong, but I think that people shouldn't be laughed at for investigating that possibility in like a real way. But I just would suspect that it'll be something that we didn't, maybe it's like an instrument error, maybe it's some kind of glitch in the software. So, I mean, and it's more likely to be something like that, in my opinion, than an actual alien craft, but I would love to be proven wrong.
Yeah. We are out of time, unfortunately, Mike. I do want to just say, though, I love how we can't really predict when volcanoes are going to erupt here on Earth, but apparently we know one is maybe going to erupt on Jupiter soon.
Yeah, the most volcanic body in the solar system, Jupiter's moon Io. It's far more volcanic than Earth, and it's because it's pretty close to Jupiter, and Jupiter is huge and has really strong gravity. And this moon orbits Jupiter once every 1.75 days, so it's inside it's like inside you're getting churned like to mush by Jupiter's gravity.
Wait, hold on one second. It is rotating around Jupiter, which is gigantic. More than every 2 days.
Yeah. And so it's so close that it's like insides are just constant magma because they get pulled this way and that. And so all that friction heat just melts the rock in the inside. And so it's like a volcano. Like the entire moon is almost a volcano.
Wow.
And there's one big volcano. It's a weird volcano from our perspective. It's like a lava lake, basically. It's like 120 miles wide. And it's like it's a lava lake, but every like year and a half or so, it like explodes or it erupts or whatever. It just basically flares up. There's this huge heat signature coming from this thing, and they don't really know what the eruption is actually like. It's probably not like an Earth volcano that we're used to, like a big cone spitting up lava into the atmosphere. It's probably like this lava lake, the top of it is cooled off enough to get a crust, and then that crust breaks off and falls into the lava lake below it, and that generates a lot of just craziness, and it blasts out a bunch of stuff. That's what scientists think is happening, but they've noticed that it happens about every 475 days, and we're about due for the next one. So we will see if their theories are right.
Dude, space is messed up. That's all I can say.
That's true.
That's crazy. All right, Mike. Thanks for joining us, and we'll do this again real soon, okay?
Sure thing. Sounds good.
All right, and you can find out more of Mike's great work. He's got a great team over there at space.com. It's been a new bookmark of mine, a new Instagram follow, a new Twitter follow. I absolutely love it, and he loves our intro, so he gets to keep on coming back. All right, this is when the show gets loopy. It's 12:38. Because I think I've been up now for just about 24 hours. So this is where things get weird.
Oh, you're young. You can handle it.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know I can, Roger.
Yeah, I know you can.
720 WGN, John Hansen in the building. I might be here longer in the building, but I'm on the air till 1 o'clock. Matt Bubala takes over then. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've learned today. And I know that the day is only 38 minutes old, but, you know, we're going to go back to yesterday, too. So let's find out what we learned and today I learned. We'd like to put on nice, relaxing, soft music to just really get you in the mood, Roger. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling mellow.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Heidemann, how you doing?
Oof.
Oof? You're doing oof?
Feeling good. I'm feeling a bit oof.
But, oof? A bit oof?
I think you're feeling a bit aloof.
A bit aloof, a bit of an oof, but mainly just feeling fine on this great Friday, Saturday morning.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, this is where we find out things that we learned today. Feel free to text in yours, too, 312-981-7200. I don't even know where to start with mine, but here we go.
All right.
We're going to go off we're going to go across the pond for what I learned today.
Oh, nice.
Henry Robert Pierce was an Australian. Oh, great. Wrong pond.
Wait, the other, which pond? The left pond or the right pond?
The left pond.
The left pond,
more of a big one. We're going across the Pacific. Man, I messed that up. All right, so Henry Robert Pierce was an Australian sculler of the 1920s and 30s. Can anyone guess what a sculler is, Roger?
Yeah, a boat.
Yep.
Yeah, sailor.
A sailor who was still viewed as an iconic sportsman. He was inducted into the Australian Hall of Fame in 1985. They named him the finest sculler of all, professional or amateur, in all the years before World War II. So his legend might spring from the fact that he was the first singles sculler in the world to win back-to-back Olympic gold medals. But it was an act of compassion, not of physical prowess, that truly immortalized him in people's hearts and minds. Now we're going from that pond across the other pond, okay?
Now we're in both ponds.
He sculled across all the ponds to the Amsterdam Olympics of 1928.
Ah.
Pierce was leading in his quarterfinal race when he heard shouts from the bank. He turned around, coming face to face with a duck, followed by a line of fluffy ducklings crossing the Stoughton Canal right across his path. Look, he could have simply cut right through them, but instead he slowed and leaned on his oars, waiting until the ducks had passed. His competitor, Soren, which just sounds like the evil...
Yeah, right. Loki's half-half brother?
Yes. A powerful rower who would win 9 national titles at 3 European championships. He took advantage of his opponent's gentlemanly pause and added a 5-length lead. In an incredible display of skill in the final 1,000 meters of the race, Pierce caught up to the Frenchman, securing an almost 30-second lead as he crossed the finish line. He not only won the race, but ultimately the final, setting a new games record, and a simple act of compassion has never been forgotten. He went on to prove himself to be leagues ahead of his competition. He won the Olympic title again in L.A. in 1932, so crossed the pond, and then ruled over rowing for 12 years as a world professional champion, and he let the ducks go by. That's what I learned today.
Wow.
Whoa, jeez.
Learned a lot about sculling. Learned
that's a lot.
About our oceans a little bit, too.
Yeah, yeah. Left and right.
Yeah, left and right, like yeah. Learned that,
too. Now, ethics, powerful, right. What was the guy's name? Soren?
Soren, yeah. The Soren. French rower. Ugh. The gentleman's gold, they called it. Okay, that's a cool story. Michael, what'd you learn today?
I learned a lot today, but the main thing that I found was that. This is really interesting because we were just talking about movies with Blake earlier.
Yeah.
And did you know that having standard showtimes for films was not common until 1960?
Really?
Yeah. In fact, previously, most films would just play on a loop and people could enter in at any time. And it wasn't until Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho that required people to watch from the beginning to the end.
Oh, because he wanted people to not... Yeah, he wanted to see that beginning scene.
He was a master of the suspense and the twist endings. And that was why they made showtimes more standard. And it was because of that film that we have the set showtimes that we have today. I didn't know that they went on a loop.
Why the hell did they do that? Doesn't seem to think that we need to get to Psycho in 1960 for people to realize that, hey, maybe we should set a time for this thing. Mm-hmm. Like Wizard of Oz makes no sense if you're halfway in it. It's just some little girl prancing around with a bunch of scary things in the forest. You need the beginning to set that up.
Yeah.
That's 1939. Why wasn't that at set times?
It seems strange because movies didn't have set show times. This was an era before Cineplexes when most films were screening for a couple of days at a ground movie hall or local single screen theater. And the theaters simply projected the movies on a loop throughout the day. What? People just come and go as they please.
What?
And you could just stay as long as you wanted to.
Really? Well, I remember the double features and in the Depression it was very popular just to go in there for air conditioning. Too for anything.
That's right.
But like, still, at least give me an estimate.
Did you know that one of the first places to ever hold air conditioning was the circus? Was the Ringling Brothers Circus, and that's why people would flock to them because they were the first bringers of AC to the modern world.
Wow.
Yeah.
I learned another thing today. Look at that.
I'm double dosing on the learning here.
Now, Roger, you're a young man. Did you know this about movies just playing on loops?
You know, I didn't know about it specifically, but I'm not surprised by it because in the early days, first of all, you could walk into movies were individual. You could only one person at a time could watch them on the Nickelodeons.
Oh, remember you had way back. Had to, wow,
right. So
I love how you just said remember, John. I don't remember the Nickelodeons.
But once they were able to then project them onto a screen, the same way of doing it was that the door would be open. You'd walk in, you'd pay your money, and then you would go in and sit. So it was always, the doors were always open. You didn't have to wait for the movie to start. With a Nickelodeon, you could walk in and put your money in, and you could start turning the handle, and you would pick up the movie wherever. Someone may have left it. Mm-hmm. Some people would watch it several times in a row to make sure that they understood what they were watching. So I am assuming that's kind of how it went at the beginning of a room full of people watching a projection.
Yeah, maybe.
It just kind of makes sense that that's the way it would go.
Okay.
Could you imagine Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, like, back in the 1930s? He'd be like, hey, yes, I wanted to give my thoughts on the local movie about the man building the railroad and the woman doing the ballerina dance.
Yes, right.
Minute 30 was great.
Yes. But I only had two nickels, so...
It dragged it about 45 seconds.
Yes.
But, you know, overall, it was okay.
Okay. Roger, what'd you learn today?
I learned today... Nothing that's on the internet. I learned today.
Oh, you mean that you didn't actually fake this segment? You actually, this is something
nothing
legit.
That I learned new.
In the real world.
You know, I'm always following the news on my Twitter and Facebook feed. I research more detailed on stories I see on Twitter that, like science stories, space stories. I knew about the UFO story. Mm-hmm. I was very intrigued about that.
No one is, you're sounding like you're defending yourself here, Roger.
No, I'm not defending
no
myself at all.
No one's questioning your knowledge of news.
I appreciate that. Thank you. But I learned today that even though I started listening to them in the 60s, mm-hmm. in the early 60s, that I can still be emotionally moved by the Beatles' music.
Really? Oh, because you...
So emotionally moved.
You're referring to the movie Yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a great movie.
We saw it in a movie theater when it's been about 3, 4, 5 months, maybe 4 months. And we went and saw it with...
Really timely, Roger.
Well, no. Hold on. Okay, follow me. I'm going
to... Sorry, I thought you were like, oh, I saw this just, 5 months ago. I just
you know,
remembered to
just
tell
stand
you
still. I'm just going to...
You're right,
no.
Sorry.
So we saw
the
theater.
You got the Nickelodeon version.
Yeah, I got
it.
You've been watching it 1 minute at a time.
You know, my arm kind of cramped up in about an hour and a half.
Get a couple more quarters in there, Roger. Watch it faster. Jeez.
We saw it with Steve and Johnny in the movie right theater.
They're still the first drummer. They haven't even gotten this. Pete Best is still doing
still
it.
Doing it.
Yeah. Go ahead, sorry. Oh, you were Steve and Johnny.
Yeah.
Oh, saw it.
We,
oh, cool.
We saw it together. And I saw it again yesterday on Amazon Prime. It's been released,
cool,
so it's
cool,
it's
cool
online now. And I started to watch it again because it is such a... It's not just the Beatles music. Just a beautiful, beautiful story. Very well done. And I just, every time a song played, I just choked up. I started crying. It just, the music that they produced, I am so sorry that they're not together, that they can't produce more, that they haven't produced more since 70, I mm-hmm believe it was. But yet, what they have left as a legacy, some of the greatest rock and roll music ever. And it still emotionally moves me.
Oh, beautiful, Roger.
I love the Beatles, Raj. That's
excellent.
Touching thing. You know, all their music was written before they were 30 years old, too.
Isn't that something?
Which always blows me away to think about.
Just fantastic. And how they just, the story of how they all got together. It was just happenstance. It really was. And it's just beautiful. And so I highly recommend, especially for a very special moment towards the end of the movie.
No spoilers, Rog.
No, I'm just saying a very special moment towards the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That if you want to see this story, which is not really about the Beatles, it's a love story, is mm-hmm what it is. And plus, it's the only movie that I know of that they've given their approval, the publishing house, the owners of the music, mm-hmm, have given to use nearly every single song they produced.
Wow. Roger, I love how you gave us such an emotional today, I learned. I appreciate mm-hmm that.
Well, thank you.
It transitions perfectly to my next one. Painting eyes on cows' butts will keep farmers from shooting lions. Hope that pause was good. In what is one of the craziest headlines I've ever written, says the author, and one of the craziest ones I've ever read. Actual advances, this is legit, in livestock protections are happening by scientists painting eyes on the butts of cows. The research is based upon the idea that farmers who are protecting their herd from lions... When they're really protecting their herds, they just shoot and kill lions. Like, they want to protect their livestock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense, but it ends up in a lot of lions getting shot that, for the most part, should be unnecessary. You know, they're just doing their thing.
Right.
They're just trying to eat. When I'm hangry, trust me,
hangry.
I wish someone would put a bullet in my brain and stop me to eat from that pizza. Anyways, that was too far, sorry. Researchers in Australia, across the left pond, as we've established, they've been devising and testing a method of trickery to make the lions think that they're being watched. So they literally stamp these eyes on the butt of the cow. And I have a photo.
Oh, my God.
Which doesn't translate to radio that great, but just picture two eyes. And where the nose is the tail. I won't tell you what the mouth is.
Yeah. Hello.
But the lions then, they go and they're like about to attack the cows and they're like, well, it's watching me. What if the cow starts shouting?
Oh, I was going to say something I'm not going to.
No. So... There are non-lethal methods. This is a non-lethal way. And apparently it's really working. So the lions just sit there then and they don't attack the cows.
And what do they try to have conversations? They're like, how are you doing today?
Right.
Wasn't going to eat you. Why aren't you talking to me? Are you mad at me?
Right. And then they just let, you know.
No, we're not taking no.
So I'm glad Roger loves the Beatles. quick commercial break.